I would describe Glendronach like sipping velvet, as I mentioned before. Like sipping velvet and the ultimate sherry cask indulgence. Within that, the tastes of brambles, of dark fruit, of chocolate, of malt, of Christmas cake, of so much richness and so much indulgence. I think that's pretty much it. Pretty much it.
We are Miriam,
Martin,
and Manuel. We love Scotland, traveling, and whiskey.
On our trips, we talk to the people to bring their stories to you and to share our love for the water of life.
This is Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk. Today, we are in Munich, our hometown, for a very special episode. First of all, I will host this episode together with Davide, better known to his 200,000 followers on Instagram as Whiskey Munich. Martin and Manu are going to take a break, so welcome, Davide.
Hi, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And then we together have the honor to talk to Rachel Barry, the master blender of the Glendronach, Glenglassaugh and Benriach today. Welcome to the podcast, Rachel. Okay.
Guten Tag.
Guten Tag. Well done. You even speak German.
Ein bisschen. Not enough, though. So please continue to speak English.
We will certainly continue in English. And let's start right away. So we will focus on Glendronach today. And next year, 2026, will mark a big anniversary for Glendronach. How do you and the people at the distillery feel about 200 years of Glendronach?
Oh, very, very excited. You know, it's only a few weeks away until 2026. And yeah, we have wonderful new whiskies, which I can't quite talk about yet. And also new experiences at the distillery because we've been expanding it. And, you know, we will have a new visitor experience as well. So we're very, very excited.
That's nice. And we will also talk about visitor experience and what to expect when you make all the way up to Huntly a little bit later. But before that, we start with you as a person. So I read that you grew up basically down the road from the distillery. How does it feel, or how did that place shape your love for whiskey growing up there, now working there?
Yeah, I mean, when I was young, my dad collected whiskey and enjoyed Glendronach, and my grandmother cooked with Glendronach, and I actually remember visiting the distillery in 1977. I'm that old. and also, you know, and running through the fields of barley at the distillery, and of course, picking the Bromberen, because Glendronach means Valley of the Brambles, and we have lots of berries there. So it's home. What can I say? It's home.
Sounds nice.
Amazing. Then you moved away and studied chemistry at the University of Edinburgh. How did the chemistry studies cross paths with whiskey? Was it a master plan or?
No, not a master plan at all. Because, you know, I started actually with medicine and then I decided I didn't like that. So I changed to chemistry and I love distillation. I love creating new smells and tastes and colors and everything. And of course, the theory behind it as well. So, you know, chemistry is great grounding and understanding nature at the end of the day. You know, you understand how things behave, how molecules behave, how enzymes work, how yeast works, etc., etc. So that kind of gave me the theory and understanding of the science. And then, you know, I could then combine that with my hobby, because when I was at university, at Edinburgh University, I collected two miniatures every week. That's all I could afford. One to drink and one to keep. I have a lovely collection of miniatures, getting to know all the malt whiskies in Scotland. So it was my hobby, but I never actually thought it would synchronize with my chemistry degree until a job appeared at the Scotch Whisky Research Institute. Complete serendipity. And I got the job and the rest is history.
Fantastic. Okay, you've been with Brown-Forman and the Glendronach for a while, but before you did work for other legendary distilleries. Is there one that keeps a special place in your heart? Do you still have connections with with them? How's it going?
I mean, we're a very small industry. We're a very collaborative industry. And through Scotch Whisky Research Institute, Scotch Whisky Association, I see all my counterparts in the industry. We do meet. We judge whisky. We judge competitions. We get together. So, of course, I'm connected. And, of course, we are on social media as well. So we see what each other's doing when we're traveling the world as well. So I think they've all got a place in my heart. I've worked with three different companies. Firstly, with Glenmorangie, LVMH, also Ardbeg, Glenmurray. Also with Suntory, Beam Suntory, and that was with Laphroaig, Beaumont, and the malts there. And of course, left the best till last with Brown-Forman, with Glendronach coming back home after traveling all around Scotland working with other distilleries. But yeah, I keep. They've all got a special place in my heart. Every whiskey I have made, I literally can taste it just by thinking about it, because I can remember the taste. And of course, I have a collection at home to remember all the whiskies I've made over the years.
It's impressive that you remember so much, but you just said it, you saved the best for last, and then it was time to come back home. When did you realize, or how did you realize, that it was time to go back home to Glendronach?
Well, I got a tap on the shoulder, I hate to say it, but yeah. I mean, you know, obviously my predecessor, Billy Walker, you know, he owned the distilleries, and then, you know, Brown-Forman, and bought them. And I had a link with Brown-Forman before, because even when I was at Glenmorangie, like for 17 years, Brown-Forman actually was part of Glenmorangie as well. So going back to Brown-Forman was really special. And yeah, going back to Glendronach was so special because my parents are still there. We have a head office as well, a bottling plant vatting facility in Edinburgh, where I also live. So I can go between my home, where I was brought up, near Glendronach, and also my other home in Edinburgh, where the head office is. So, yeah, it was just perfect synchronicity.
So it's home and home. And
home and home.
How about the other two, the sister distilleries, Glenglassaugh and Benriach? They're not geographically not really far away from Glendronach, but are they also close to your heart? Do they feel
like
home?
Of course, because I was brought up there. You know, we're so lucky in Aberdeenshire, because we literally, you can, as a child, you have experience of the mountains, the sea, the valleys, the fertile landscape, being outdoors, you know, doing so many activities. You know, that was my childhood, very adventurous, being outdoors with my family, you know, canoeing down the Spey, or surfing in Sandown Bay, where Glenglassaugh is. I learned to surf with my dad. And also at Glendronach, where I, you know, was farming and picked potatoes and berries.
Brambles.
Brambles, of course, Bromberon. And at Benriach, where when I was 18, I actually learned to fly a glider plane.
Wow.
And that was kind of over Benriach. So my first kind of aerial view was actually up in a plane of over Benriach. So because we have the best thermals air for flying. In that part of Scotland.
I always dreamed of being a pilot. So maybe one time in Scotland.
Yeah. For gliding, it's great fun. It's great fun. You don't need to be a pilot. You can just be in the glider and look over the distillery.
Just for the views.
For the fun, yeah.
Sounds like a plan. Okay, from the past a bit to the present and the future. I think this is undeniably a challenging moment for the whiskey industry. And we'd like to have your point of view. What do you think is the state of the whiskey industry today?
I think it's been a very interesting journey. I've been in the industry for 34 years nearly. So I've seen peaks and troughs. I've seen growth and then industry cutting back probably about 3 or 4 times. However, I would say that every time the industry comes back, it comes back stronger and more powerful than before. So even though when there is a dip, you know, a few years later, it comes back again. So I think, you know, it's very much been a cycle. And of course, we have the best of the best. So, you know, with single malt Scotch whisky, people appreciate it. They are looking for, you know, less is more. You know, it's to sip and savor. You know, it's like sipping velvet. It's so beautiful that, you know, we're at the start of a richly rewarding journey. And with Glendronach, we could not have grown before now. So even a few years ago, when it was kind of a peak, I suppose, all our whiskies were on allocation. We could not sell them around the world. So I'm actually quite glad in a way, because it means that we have had the time to build up the whiskey that we can now share with the world. And, you know, this is the time for Glendronach. Now is the time.
Now something about your role. So you're often described as one of the most influential master blenders of this generation. The role carries a certain mystique. So what we like to understand is, how would you find the role of a master blender today? And this is very interesting for me. Do you think this can be taught through training and experience, or it does require a natural, almost instinctive sensitivity to flavors?
Yeah, great questions. It's a blend of art and science, and I mean that in the broadest terms. So I think to be a master blender, you have to have a great nose, first and foremost, the nose, as we say. You have to have great senses and also have an open mind to possibilities and be able to blend art and science. So the science is the technology, the analytics, have a critical thinking to be able to develop strategy, make decisions. And then the art is the expressive part of the role where, you know, I take insights from all around the world, from being here in Munich, from the place, the people I meet, from the whole experience. The art is then, you know, taking that back to the distillery, exploring flavor, and doing this in the broadest sense. You know, so when I'm creating whiskey, sometimes I'm thinking about music, sometimes I'm thinking about dance. And, you know, you just allow yourself to have a really, really open mind and imagination. I think that's really important too.
And what do you do if you have the feeling like, oh, people are looking for something special and we can find it in the Glendronach, but it's something that you maybe personally do not really enjoy or like? Do you have that? Or do you think everything can be blended in a way to make it great?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Glendronach is a great, great whiskey to have for people who are connoisseurs, but also for people who are new. So I think the importance is to be relevant to the drinker. You know, talk in terms, tell the stories that resonate, that make people want to have a desire to taste the whiskey. But, you know, who doesn't love chocolate, cherries, dark fruit?
Shall I tell you a secret? I don't like chocolate. Ah. But in whiskey, it's okay. I just don't like to eat it.
Yeah, well, it's lovely in whiskey. Maybe more like vanilla, you know? It's maybe my chocolate is your vanilla. Or or maybe coffee. You like coffee?
I don't drink coffee either. But in whiskey, I enjoy the aromas. It's just I don't really like them on their own.
Well, there's much, you know, single malt Scotch. Glendronach is so complex. You know, there's hundreds of aromas in there. And the, you know, you can dissect them and pick them up. But at the same time, you can just think, wow, that's delicious. And it's rich. It's indulgent. It's a beautiful taste. You know, you don't have to find the different aromas or tastes, you know, as long as you can appreciate and enjoy it.
Absolutely. Now, back to your role a little bit. Because if you were looking for an apprentice, imagine you need an apprentice now.
I have an apprentice, actually.
You need another one. I'm very sure a few of our listeners, me included, by the way, would love to apply. But what would be the requirements? What would you say is important to become your apprentice?
I think having an open mind to learning, being curious, and having a passion for whiskey, I think is number one. You know, because you have to love what you do, you know, and you have to want to learn about it and discover it and always be learning new things every day. So for me, that's the most important thing, to be curious, to be creative. So have great ideas and great imagination, to have courage so that when you eventually take over from me in many years to come, but still, that you have the courage to make the decisions that I've made during my journey. Yeah, I think they're the main things. And also to be receptive to other people as well and get on with people. That's really, really important because, you know, you have to understand the consumer as well. So everything from the barley right through to the drinker. You know, you have to be interested in the whole journey.
Yeah, it's a chain of things that you have to understand and be interested in.
Yeah.
And when we're moving away from your role a little bit, who is the Rachel behind the master blender? Who is the Rachel, like the normal day Rachel?
I'm the same person, of course. I take my whole self to work. What can I say? You know, so, and I do enjoy whiskey at home as well. So, you know, it's not just work for me. It's also a pleasure. But, you know, I've obviously live in Aberdeenshire near Glendronach and also in Edinburgh. I'm married. I have a husband. I have three sons. who have grown up, so I get to travel a lot more, so that's wonderful. I enjoy gardening, I enjoy being outdoors, cycling, climbing hills, swimming in the sea.
I've heard something about vintage motorcycles as well.
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, with my husband. It's a hobby that we share for many decades, actually, since we met. I actually met him the same year I started in the whiskey industry. So that was back in 1992. But yes, we have 7 vintage motorbikes in our garages, from 1911 Triumph TT Roadster right through to 2 BSAs from 1955, Royal Enfield from the 1920s.
Wow.
And and a couple of others as well, which are being restored.
All fully functional, the first ones.
They're fully functioning. Yes, they're fully functioning. They don't go very fast, but that's probably quite a good thing. but they're beautiful and they're polished and they're just lovely to ride, to admire. They're like a work of art, really.
Nice.
Okay, let's talk about the Glendronach Distillery. What's the very first thing that comes to your mind when you think about the distillery?
Oh my gosh, well, dark fruit brambles. Brambles, the brambles. Home, brambles, indulgence.
The first time I wrote the question was like, and why the answer is brambles? But then I decided not to ask for it, so I felt would be in there.
Yeah. Because as a child, I picked the brambles. So it kind of that instant childhood memory. And then indulgence for me is just, especially at this time of the year, you know, it's a whiskey that has a real beautiful indulgence to it. It's a treat.
Very nice. So in the beginning, we talked about the upcoming 200 years anniversary of the distillery. And well, during these 200 years, you more or less continuously produced whiskey. And Glendronach is an old traditional distillery. So is there something that is special in your production process? When we're thinking of production, the traditional methods, what do you apply?
Well, the distillery is unchanged. We are expanding the distillery, but it's still deep down in the valley. Okay, so there are some other distilleries that have moved their distillery up the hill. I shall name no names. But we are staying within the stone granite walls, which are so important to the location, the place, the character. In addition to that, we have wooden washbacks that give us that wonderful, smooth, mellow beer, the dark fruit. And we have the same stills that we've always had. I describe them like saxophone-shaped stills because of the shape of the top of the neck. It's like the mouthpiece of a saxophone. And this, again, creates this incredible mellow character that, you know, from the spirit of the still right through maturation. We also have new warehouses there. So my aim is to mature every drop of Glendronach at Glendronach Distillery. Mm-hmm. And obviously because we're growing, we've had to build new warehouses as well, and they're on site.
And
so,
do you keep everything, like all the stock at Glendronach? Because I've heard from so many distilleries that it's also dangerous if there's a fire or something, that's the reason why many put it to like the sister distilleries or something.
Yeah. I mean, over the years, obviously, there have been, warehouses have got full, so we've had to move cask to another warehouse. Also in the northeast of Scotland, though, all our whiskey is matured in the northeast of Scotland. There's nothing in the central belt. It's all matured up north. And, you know, on occasion, when we've been constrained for warehouse space, we've had to move it to another warehouse. But the goal is to move it all back. You know, we do have 7 warehouses. We will have 8. We do have 7 at the moment at the distillery. And, you know, they are spread about the site. It's not a big site, but, you know, we have a road in between 3 of our warehouses and the rest. So we should be fine.
So speaking of those warehouses, what makes them legendary? What do they contribute to maturation?
Well, I mean, I'm a really firm believer in, I suppose it's terroir, rather mm-hmm. than terroir. The influence of the atmosphere being deep down in this valley is so important. You know, earthen floored, the influence of the barley growing in the fields above, the cold temperatures. So with the stone-walled warehouses, you know, it tends to vary between 5 and 10 degrees all year round. So it's cold, cold and very cold. But there are no extremes. So we're not getting extreme cold at Glendronach, because the casks, the sherry casks, are big and they have thick staves, Spanish oak, and they all look after each other. They all sleep together. They are all nurturing each other in the warehouse. So what this means is it kind of has a buffering effect, equilibrating effect, and we don't have the extremes of temperature. So this gives us a very slow and steady, very, very complex maturation, which leads itself very, very well to long maturation, you know, from 12 years old, even right up to our oldest cask, which is 1968.
Wow. That was quite a while before I was born, so.
It's actually not long before I was born. It's very close.
Okay. Still on the topic of the distillery. When people make the journey up to Huntly, what they can expect at the distillery, and how is important the visitor center experience for telling the story of Glendronach?
Oh, it's so important. We have a beautiful visitor center at the moment. However, we are expanding and developing the visitor center. So we have a house at the top of the hill called Boyne's Mill House that is an old kind of mansion house since 1771, where our founder, James Allardyce, was born. And we are developing that house at the moment to be the start of the tour before people then go deep down into the valley and kind of unlock the hidden layers. So when they go there, you know, people can take one of four different tours. One's called Valley of the Brambles. Where you get to try, you know, the core range and our fairly new Masters Anthology range as well. And then it moves to the Revelations of Flavor, which goes into a little bit more depth and obviously the breadth of the portfolio. And the third tour is called the Sherry Cask Masterclass. So that mm-hmm. really goes deep into sherry, the oak. And then finally, there's the Boyne's Mill House tour, which is really the deepest tour of all, the richest tour. And when you get to taste some of the very, very old and rare whiskies as well, and obviously see around Boyne's Mill House. And, you know, you might even see the ghost of the Spanish lady.
Oh, that's that was my next question. Because indeed, researching the distillery, we found this story is about Spanish lady ghost. And we're curious if it's in typical Scottish style, just like a legend, or is something that is actually... Have you seen the ghost?
Well, I've felt her, let's say that. I felt her presence. But, you know, the legend is she escaped from Jerez in an empty sherry cask and lived at the distillery and passed away at the distillery and haunts the distillery to this day.
Okay. So as a summary, people who like Glendronach should visit if they like cold, cold and very cold and a ghost. And brambles.
But most importantly, they love the taste of the ultimate sherry cask indulgence, because that's what Glendronach is all about, is about producing the ultimate in the richness of sherry casks. So it's like sipping velvet in every drop.
Okay, so we're coming to that now, because actually the next topic will be the whiskey. To someone who was very unfortunate and never had the chance to taste the Glendronach until now, how would you describe Glendronach's flavor profile?
I would describe bramble. I would describe it like sipping velvet, as I mentioned before. Like sipping velvet and the ultimate sherry cask indulgence. Within that, the tastes of brambles, of dark fruit, of chocolate, of malt, of Christmas cake, of so much richness and so much indulgence. I think that's pretty much it. Pretty much it.
Good. Now, you, as the master blender, you have the hard task. I imagine it to be very difficult. So that's why I'm not yet applying for the apprenticeship. I just wait a little bit. You decide when the whiskey is ready. What does ready mean?
Yeah, great question. The nose knows. You know, that's the intuition part, isn't it? And also through experience and having a vision, I suppose, to create the ultimate Glendronach, there are facets of flavor that I always want to be there and that play a symphony of flavor to me. So robust, full-bodied, refined, and richly fruity. They are what I'm looking for in every drop of Glendronach. And the perfect moment is when it is all in perfect harmony or creates this wonderful symphony of taste, so that when you nose and taste Glendronach, you know, it starts with a wonderful movement in the symphony when you nose it. It's so aromatic, mellow, enticing. And then when you sip and savor it, it's like a sherry crescendo that builds on your palate and then leaves you with a richly satisfying finish. So that's what I'm looking for in every drop. And of course, every expression in the portfolio will have different facets of flavor and a slightly different symphony on your palate.
But then your task is not done there, not saying, oh, this is ready to be bottled, but you also have to decide what goes into single casks, what do I use for blending, and so on. So does the nose know that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I do have a few tools, though, because every single drop of Glendronach in a bottle is natural cask imparted color. This is so important, makes my job really difficult and means I have to sample thousands of casks per year. However, that really, really helps. I mean, a lot is on the nose, but it helps to be able to track the natural color hues of Glendronach over time as well. So for every bottle, you know, I have a quality standard, a gold standard that I set for the 12, the 15, 18, 21, etc. And that standard is something that I guard, maintain, I set in the first place, and means that the legacy of the quality of Glendronach will continue with me and then with whoever is next in line to come. Because, you know, protecting the quality and the standards is so, so important, because, you know, that's why people buy Glendronach, because they know it's got high quality, it's rich, it's refined, and they can guarantee that when they buy a bottle, it's going to be perfect every time.
Yeah.
Amazing. Still on the topic of cask selection, we're curious to understand which is your method. So you walk through the warehouses, it's full of casks. How do you rank them? How do you track the casks and the progression? Do you have a system of your own you're using?
Yeah, of course. We you know, I have a system. Obviously, I sample every cask at least once during its journey through Glendronach. Every parcel of 20 casks, you know, maybe sample two or three of that parcel to then put together what I call a pilot marriage of casks, which is, you know, at the start of the year, this happens about now, I'll decide on, okay, we're moving on a year. So for 12 years old, for example, you know, 2012, 2013, going into 2014 whiskey, how is the maturation for those years? What is the footprint? What is the character like? So sample from every parcel, make up pilot blends, make sure the quality is consistent every year for our core 12-year-old in particular. Measure the color, rank the samples. Usually very, very simple process I use, which is just red, amber, green. Green's good to go. Yep. Yellow maybe needs another year. And then red, maybe take it out of that cask and put it into another one. So that's the kind of process.
Now, let's say you've found a few casks, you've put a few green stickers on, maybe even double green because it's amazing.
I do the double green. Oh, that's
really
amazing. Have you been in my lab?
No, I have not. I've been to Glendronach before, actually, twice. Had a tasting and tour with Vicky. So, but I have not been to your lab.
Yeah, because I have double greens.
No, I was just assuming like there must be something better than green. So now, but then you continue. You say you do the pilot blending, and then how does it go from there? Now, you have your, like, the sample where you want to go, and then nosing, tasting? How many tries do you need until you get the perfect 12
next
year?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, with 12 years old, it's a continuous process of judging, of measuring the quality across each year, because that's what we produce most of. 65% of Glendronach goes into the 12 years old. Mm-hmm. So it's the one that takes most time. Every single batch of the 12 years old is 70 casks. So that's made out of Pedro Jimenez and Oloroso Sherry casks. So I have a split of Pedro Jimenez and Oloroso that is perfect to give you that perfect balance, that perfect symphony. And obviously I want to maintain that. Depends how much we sell. Obviously what is left and what I keep for then 15, 18 years old, 21 and so forth. So it's a balancing act. It's a balancing act, but I know the quality I want in the bottle, and I'm always working towards guarding that quality, being a custodian, and actually raising the bar a bit as well. So every, you know, I always think, oh, I'm going to get to perfection. And then I think, oh, I could just get a little bit closer to perfection just when I think I've reached it. So
triple green.
Yeah, triple green. Absolutely. So, you know, it's beautiful as it is, but I've always got a vision to make it even more the ultimate sherry cask indulgence with a little bit more maturation, always sourcing the best sherry casks, of course, which are really expensive, from Jerez, Spanish mm-hmm. Oak, of course, really, really important for Glendronach because it's the best and gives you the most velvety taste, you know. And again, this sets us apart from the competition as well.
And how about, so the last times I've been to the distillery, there were handfuls in the visitor center. How do you select them?
Well, they are the cherries on the cake.
Double green.
Cherry picking. They are the triple greens. So when you visit the distillery, you will be guaranteed we will have two handfuls. And one will probably be a Pedro Jimenez. One will probably be an Oloroso. Tend to have both so people can explore the different characteristics of each. But actually, it's the only place you can go. So you have to make the pilgrimage. If you want to buy a Glendronach between kind of 13, 14, 15, 16 years old, we don't sell casks of this age anywhere else apart from at the handful at the distillery. And they are the richest of the rich.
Yeah, and I recommend going and getting one or two bottles of them because they're usually amazing. So the last times we've been there, we always took a bottle or two home.
Yeah, yeah. I'm delighted to hear that.
Glendronach is beloved by whiskey lovers because of the sherry. So thinking about Glendronach without thinking about sherry is impossible. It's the first thing that comes to mind thinking about the distillery. We did see some releases which were, for example, peated or aged in some port casks and so on. Is there any plan for the future in, and I know you cannot disclose too much, but is there any plan to see, for example, ever an ex-bourbon cask matured Glendronach?
Do you have any in the way?
Well, you know, for me, Glendronach is about sherry cask maturation. It's about tradition. It's about time-honored methods, but with flair. So in German, traditionell mit flair. Mm-hmm. Always, always, always traditional, but with flair. And, you know, the distillery has been around since 1826. So what was amazing about the whiskey, the character back then, and the casks that would have come into the distillery would have been sherry casks and also port casks, and maybe even some Burgundy or Bordeaux wine casks as well. So, you know, this is the tradition. These were the casks that came to Scotland. And for me, they all work beautifully. So you may see some of that in future. And of course, sherry casks, mostly we buy the most Pedro Jimenez sherry casks in the industry. These are known as the King of Sherry. Beautiful for Glendronach because they bring out the dark fruit, the chocolate, and also the velvety texture. Also Oloroso, so we have, they can play the symphony of the sweetness and the acidity and the dryness of the, you know, the nuttiness and the orange. But I'm also experimenting with Amontillado sherry casks and also Pelo Cortado. So yeah, there are ways to express. We have a very expressive whiskey with Glendronach, and it can be expressed in ways that are traditional, but with flair and always, always delicious and indulgent. So, and answer to your question, because I know I'm waffling on a little bit, rambling on a little bit. So I would say no. You're not going to see a bourbon cask matured from Glendronach. There you go. There's a direct answer. Oh.
But I did try one. And it was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, Glendronach spirit is fantastic. I just think it's even more fantastic when it's in a sherry cask, in my opinion.
And when we're looking back at the core range, now you mentioned there are some other casks sometimes, like port. Does it ever go into the core range, or is that exclusively sherry?
Yeah, I mean, the 12, the 15, 18, 21 are all sherry,
just sherry
in terms of the age statements. But just this year, we have launched the Master's Anthology, mm-hmm. which really explores the breadth and the depth of Glendronach and, you know, the landscape at Glendronach during the season. So, for example, we have the Ode to the Valley expression, mm-hmm. which really is the abundance of landscape in the summer at Glendronach. When the fruit is ripe, the brambles are being picked. And this gives you, you know, a taste of a summer picnic at Glendronach. So there is port cask in there, but there also is sherry. So it's a kind of a combination of port and sherry to bring out that abundance of the landscape. And then also with our Ode to the Embers, that's where we do have some peated stock, but it's a really smoldering mm-hmm. stock. It's really, really warm and comforting, just like in the autumn months. And then we have Ode to the Dark, which is all Pedro Ximenez, the King of Sherry, probably the most indulgent of them all. So they are kind of taking different facets of the Glendronach and exploring them, allowing the drinker, the connoisseur, to enjoy them.
So the when we think about the core range, we know it's sherry only. And it's always Pedro Ximenez or Oloroso, right? It's always a combination of the two. Or do we have anything in the core range which is exclusively PX or exclusively Oloroso?
Yeah. I mean, the one I've just mentioned, the Ode to the Dark, actually is the only one that is exclusively Pedro Ximenez. So that's been the newest whiskey, which is blazing a trail. We can't keep up with demand. People are just loving that indulgence and richness. The 12-year-old is predominantly PX with some Oloroso, beautifully balanced. You know, it's like autumn fruits and leap cooking. Gingerbread. The 15-year-old is a little bit more PX, less Oloroso, and is very, very sublime and sophisticated. And then the 18-year-old is the one which is actually all Oloroso, which gives it more of a caramelization and goes more into kind of Muscovado sugar creme brulee. So there are opportunities to explore the revelations of flavor in the core range with different proportions of PX and Oloroso, or indeed one expression exclusively PX and one exclusively Oloroso.
And when you start creating something new, like you just mentioned the Master's Anthology, what does it start with? So what's the initial idea? Is the initial idea coming from, oh, I have these casks and I have the impression I could do something great in this direction? Or is the idea, I would like to have like the summer fruit, then the autumn fruit, the darkness? So where does it start?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a combination, isn't it? The best things are synchronicities, are they not? So I always imagine a style, knowing, of course, the whiskey that we've got already mm-hmm. maturing. However, I can take it in a different direction. So, you know, for the Ode to the Valley, for example, you know, I fill more ruby port pipes to really bring out that summer fruit and brambles. So they weren't there before. So, and then similarly with Ode to the Dark, Ode to the Ember, I filled more Oloroso specifically for that product with the idea in mind that it was more robust and more dry and, you know, like toffee apples and, you know, walnuts thrown on the fire with the smoldering embers. So it's a combination. So it's the idea, it's a story, it's then making the decisions to create the whiskey mm-hmm. that delivers that idea that tells the story and will hopefully resonate with people.
I'm happy you're saying it like that because in like worst case would be there's someone sitting in an office somewhere telling you, oh, we want these releases, do something. But you sound so like, oh, there's an idea. And then there's the spark and the,
yeah,
and you start there and then you do something great out of that and not someone dictating what you're doing.
I think, I mean, sometimes, you know, we do get together as a wider team and everyone can have ideas, of course. But as soon as I get a spark of something, I just do it. I just do it. And I go with it and trust my instincts. And it seems to be working because Mattress Anthology is doing really, really well. So I'm really happy about that.
Good.
Good. Let's move now from the core range to the upcoming, how to call them, ultra luxury releases. So what's the vision behind them? What can we expect?
The ultimate. Obviously, with what I've said with Glendronach, you know, it's about sipping velvet, it's about indulgent, it's about the ultimate sherry cask. Of course, the ultra premium range, the prestige range, is really going to be the creme de la creme, the very, very top, top, top quality, the very finest in richness and refinement. The richness from the sherry cask and the refinement that comes from age as well. And, you know, for me, that's what makes the very, very best single malts. You know, it's like your very best in wine. I love wine as well, I have to admit. I do love a lovely, great Burgundy wine. It's my favorite. And, you know, if you imagine what makes the finest wine, it's richness and refinement combined. That's what I'm looking for.
Sounds like we really want to try. And now looking at these, like the 30-year-old, 40-year-old, what do these bottlings or this, what does this whiskey tell you about time and patience and the importance of time and patience maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because these whiskies are obviously from before my time at the distillery. So, you know, the 40-year-old is from the late 1970s and early 1980s. And the 30-year-old is from the 1990s because, you know, we had a gap in distillation between 96 and 2001. So there is that gap. And so the whiskies are created from this older whiskey. However, I'm able to shape them. And I suppose that's the patience. You know, I've been with the company now for 9 years. And, you know, right at the start, of course, I sampled every cask from the 70s, 80s and 90s to decide, you know, the journey of Glendronach, the next chapter, the journey it was going to take. And back then, you know, I had an idea of what the 30 and 40 might be. And so I did, you know, try to, I did experiment. So with the 30-year-old, we had, you know, I created stock in Pedro Jimenez Oloroso. I also introduced Amontillado sherry for the first time. So, and took the time to really explore what combination would be the most complete, in my opinion, experience of three sherry casks, a symphony of three sherry casks. But that took time, you know, that's been, you know, almost a decade, you know, since I started that journey. And then similarly with the 40-year-old, on sampling those casks, I decided quite early on that I was going to combine them. So from, you know, two from the 70s and two from the 80s and transfer four casks into three and then into two and then into one during a process I would call like élevage to make the ultimate taste, the most sherry cask elixir possible, you know. But again, that took me the past nearly decade of working with the whiskey. And of course, it took a lot longer, you know, 30 years and 40 years.
Part of the art of making whiskey.
Yeah. And you have to be patient. You have to be patient and you have to, of course, you have to sample. You can never sample enough whiskey, of course. And then just, you know, make the decisions which are based on the nosing, the sensory profile, the taste and the whole experience that to make it the best it can be.
Amazing. Whiskey fans love details.
We want to know everything.
Okay. Yeah. There's a lot of details to tell.
How do you see the balance between transparency and a bit of mystery? Like every whiskey lover, whiskey nerd wants to know everything, every parcel, every cask. Is this like ruining partially like the mystery, the mystique of every product?
You know, I think it depends on the person, you know. I mean, you know, it's like being a master blender, isn't it? Being a consumer as well, because, you know, you have an analytical brain and you have a creative brain who loves a story. So, you know, I suppose it depends on how your brain works, doesn't it? Of whether you want to get into the details that's going to enrich the experience for you personally, or whether you just prefer to trust your instincts and enjoy the experience for what it is without having to know every detail. Just rely on your senses and just enjoy. So I think it depends. It's a very personal thing. So I'm not going to say there's a right or wrong. When the whiskey's in your glass, it's up to you. And if you want to know every detail, you can. Or if you're new to whiskey, you can just enjoy it. And
I do have the feeling that sometimes when there is full transparency over everything, this might bias the drinker somehow, which automatically, for example, let's say I'm prone to not loving wine casks, and I know that within a release there is some wine cask, this could bias me into disliking a product. So I do think that should very likely drinking purely blind or just like not having 100% transparency could help the experience in some cases. And suddenly you might find a wine cask which is amazing for you, though it's not your typical kind of maturation. So I think it's a good balance indeed.
Yeah, I completely agree, because I think, you know, the richness of the story, the aroma, the taste, you know, that's why people enjoy single malt scotch the most, isn't it? They find one that suits their palate and that's what they love. So, yeah, I think you just have to have an open mind with single malt, you know, and mm-hmm. explore the flavor, because we have incredible diversity of style, individuality of character, and, you know, shutting down any particular style just because of a bias, I think is really sad.
I agree.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, it's like saying, you know, I'm not going to try that food because I don't like whatever. It's part of the richness of life, being able to enjoy many different tastes and flavors.
Absolutely. We said many words about the Glendronach, so let's try to summarize it up in three of them.
Okay, let me think of three. See, sherry cask is two, isn't it?
Nah, that counts as one.
Does that count as one?
Yeah, yeah. One. Okay. It's one.
In German, sherry fass is one word, so we count it as one.
Rich sherry cask indulgence.
Very nice.
Should be the tagline on the packaging.
Maybe one day.
That might be the headline of Rachel's chapter at the Glendronach. Mm-hmm.
I hope so.
Yeah. Also a release named The Brambles or something like that would be interesting for the future. The Bramble
release. It's possible.
Release.
I mean, we've got Ode to the Valley, which is kind of, with the port, it's got the Brambles. But that's a great suggestion, I think. Maybe one for the future.
Let's see what the future holds at Glendronach. So we always finish our podcast episodes, and we're almost at the end, with a set of quick questions. So,
oh no.
Now, quick questions. Number one, if Glendronach 40 was a classical piece of music, which one would it be and why?
Ravel's Bolero.
And why? Short answer.
Because it's the way it moves on your palate is like the bolero dance.
Perfect.
Perfect. Quick question number two. You can invite three people from any time in history for dinner. Who will be joining you?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think Audrey Hepburn, definitely. I love her style so much, so much. Audrey Hepburn, she's definitely. And then I have Dr. Jim Swan, who was my mentor, who I described as the Einstein of whiskey, and sadly passed away a few years ago. And I'd love to share with him the Glendronach today and really to hear what he has to say, and hope that he likes it. So bear the two, and then what else would I have? I'd have to have my dad as well, because Glendronach's his favourite dram, so he'd have to be there too.
Sounds like a nice family, extended family.
Yeah, extended family. Yeah, absolutely.
And last quick question. If you could take a bottle of Glendronach 12 and your coolest vintage motorbike on a three-week road trip, where would you go? And maybe with your husband, but you can take him or not.
Oh my gosh. Well, vintage motorbikes don't go too far. I'd love to travel the world on them, but you know, you'd have to get them on a ship.
It's for free. Just imagine, you take it on a ship and then you just jump on wherever you want to be.
Oh my gosh. Favorite places. That's so difficult. So, but I definitely think it would be here in Munich. I think, because the style of Munich, I love the old buildings, I love the feel, and yeah, I think it would be here in Munich. I think I just need to get the Triumph 1911 TT Roadster here first, because I don't think it would be able to ride it all the way across Europe. I think we'd have to transport it first and then ride it around the streets of Munich in some wonderful, old tweed clothes and just be that kind of old school feel, you know?
Yeah, next time I see someone on a vintage Triumph in the streets of Munich, I will just shout Rachel in case it's you.
So yeah, with a bottle of Glendronach 12, of course.
In your backpack, because don't drink and drive.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, in our leather, picnic basket at the back of the Triumph.
Perfect. That would be great for a photo for your profile, David.
Oh, yeah. Anytime.
So that's the end of our podcast. Thank you very much, Rachel, for taking the time and to have such a lovely chat with us. And if you want to know more about Glendronach, please visit their website on glendronachdistillery.com and follow Rachel on Instagram at rbwhiskeymaker, or make the trip up to Huntly to see the distillery firsthand. And also thank you, Davide, for being the co-host today. You guys, don't forget to follow Davide at whiskey_Munich on Instagram. And yeah, thank you both for the podcast. We are Miriam and Davide, and this was Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk with Rachel Berry of Glendronach Distillery.
Dankeschön.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for joining us on the Barrel Talk today. If you enjoyed this episode, tune in again next time for some more tales about the water of life. And in the meantime, follow us on Instagram at @inside_whiskey, on Facebook at Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk, or visit our website on insidewhiskey.de. This was Inside Whiskey, the Barrel Talk.